Welcome to The Breakdown. This is your host, Yasser Louati, speaking to you from the Paris Southside Banlieue. We are dedicating this episode to the events that took place on Capitol Hill, namely the riots slash attempted coup following Donald Trump's refusal to admit his defeat in the presidential election of 2020. And of course, what happened before that, which means, you know, the Donald Trump speech to prepare them for this assault. The second question we'll try to deal with is, of course, what made this possible on such a short notice? What made it possible for them to literally storm Capitol Hill and with almost no police protection? And several accounts show that the DC police refused the support from the governor of Maryland, who had the troops on hand, ready to be deployed. And of course, the aftermath of this riot on Capitol Hill. For this, of course, I'm welcoming back Tori Russell, historic activist from St. Louis, among the first co-founders of the Black Lives Matter movement after the killing of Mike Brown, and today co-founder of the Movement for Black Lives. He's also the head of the International Black Freedom Alliance, and of course, a staunch critic of American exceptionalism and a staunch internationalist when it comes to struggles against white supremacy and capitalism. Tori Russell, welcome again to The Breakdown.
Thanks for having me. Crazy time,
man. Crazy times indeed, and I'm gonna ask you straight up, how was your reaction when you saw the first pictures of these white supremacists marching on Capitol Hill without much resistance from the police?
Another day in America. You know, it was white supremacy on display. I have to, you know, you just think about, you see all them white people just walking up, marching, yelling in the police face, threatening them, eventually, going through the barricades. You can't help but wonder, like, just this summer, you know, people was protesting in D.C. on those same Capitol buildings. You know, I've been there protesting. I've been outside of there. I know people when the women went there just for around abortion and women's rights, 600 people were arrested. They weren't even allowed, through the rotunda. And so I guess it's different if you're a black person or a brown person protesting in D.C. And if you're a white man, talking about sovereign and white rights.
But is this comparison really welcome when we know that this is how it is? You know, it's not like it did not happen before. It's not like we have not seen white supremacists dealt with kindness, with respect. How many times did we see, white rioters being, given, bottles of water and carried? I'm not going to name them, but for example, when they stormed the Michigan Capitol, they were not called terrorists. And on the very same day that they marched on Capitol Hill, they also marched on the Capitol in Kansas City, for example. And we had other people, literally putting a guillotine on display in Arizona. So is it really the time to compare? Had they been Black Lives Matter activists, they would have been welcomed with, live ammunition. But when they are white, this is what we get. Or should we, once and for all, draw the conclusion that this is what America is, that there is treatment for the white supremacists, and there is, of course, repression for the rest? We can name COINTELPRO to this day, and the criminalization of black activists, the criminalization of Muslims, the criminalization of indigenous people, etc. And that's why I get uncomfortable when people try to say, yeah, had there been BLM marchers, it would have been different.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we do that, to really, try to capitalize, what is this, and as a comparison. I think when you poor and oppressed, you're doing it to teach a history lesson. The history of these colonies, or these colonizing nation states, be it France, be it the U.S., this is, the tale of two colonies, the tale of two nations. And so, what Macron would say, how they welcome Muslims would be different from how a Muslim would tell the story to their family and to their community. And I think for Black people in America, Mob rule has always been the way that white people mobilize to recorrect America, be it 1812, be it after Restruction era, be it in criticism to Dr. King and the peaceful marches in the 60s for the civil rights movement. White people get angry. White people organize themselves in ways very quickly. We've seen, you know, how quickly they were ready to mobilize, and they always have an advocate in the White House. And so when President Trump said in the presidential debates to the Proud Boys and other white nationalists to stand back and stand by, they did just that. And I guess January 6th was the day that they could come out their caves and do what white people do.
What is your take when you see many members of Congress and, you know, media pundits expressing their shock and horror before this display of, you know, outright white supremacy and white entitlement, you know, on Capitol Hill? And when you see media pundits acting as if it was not predictable?
Yeah, you know, they aiding and abating in a coup, in a, you know, in an insurrection. You know, they be it Dana Bash on CNN, you know, be it any other white supremacist, they are, you know, creating a narrative that this is just normal. And so we are always saying that, you know, we have to create a new normal, and we can't go back to anybody's normal, because anybody's normal in the U.S. society has been the mistreatment of Black people. And so you have the white right being, you know, Josh Hawley or Ted Cruz saying they won't, you know, throw away the protesters or the terrorists who showed up at Capitol Hill. They want to carry that mantle. But you also have moderates and you have centrists. You have Joe Biden saying we need to go back to normal. So if everybody's talking about a normal where Black people could be abused, could be disenfranchised and could be killed for doing the same things that anybody else who exercises their, you know, quote unquote, constitutional rights. That's a normal we don't want. And that's a fight that I think Black people and brown people and oppressed people in this country and all around the world should take up a mantle and really push on. Well, you know, we don't have that, you know, to say, to be frank, we don't have diehards public advocates on the left. You know, Bernie Sanders might talk about $2,000 checks, you know, for stimulus packages, but he won't talk about the police head on and saying that they are, you know, a failed institution that needs to be defunded. AOC and the squad won't do that same thing. They may have critiques of it, but they're also going to go around with the Nancy Pelosi's and other people. So what we have to be is steadfast and being the left, being progressive politics, and not get caught up in, like you said, a false dichotomy of the us and them, when it's always been two Americans and always going to be a us and them.
Yeah, but this time there is clearly an open confrontation that maybe for our generation we have not seen. And I'm going to read to you. I mean, there is this Facebook post that has been, you know, going around on social media, even went viral, that actually may answer the question, are we facing a dysfunctioning or a, some kind of, you know, sand, you know, in the machine of American democracy, or are we talking about an outright conspiracy? There is this person called Courtney Kraft, who says he's a DC police officer and who commented about 12 hours ago. And I'm going to quote him, and I'm going to have you then, you know, jump on this, Tori. So I came back to Facebook for the very reason I left. Yesterday's terrorist attack on the Capitol Hill building was shameful. I will say this from firsthand knowledge. I looked evil in its face for 14 hours. The narrative that keeps coming up is that somehow Antifa infiltrated the MAGA group or the Trump supporters. And that's true. That's what has been being carried by Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham on Fox News. I continue. I will say that is a lie. The people who showed up yesterday were off duty police officers. I repeat myself. I will say that is a lie. The people who showed up yesterday were off-duty police officers from all over the country. They were military members, they were teachers, students, people from every walk of life, and they did exactly what they planned to do, and they got the results that we all expected them to have. They virtually went unpunished. I'm gonna, you know, stop there. The results of that, 5 people died, a police officer as well. We haven't seen as many arrests as during the Breonna Taylor marches. And how do you react when you see a police officer himself? Of course, I have not had the time to kind of, you know, investigate who he really is, but that has been shared by, among others, by Sean King, to name one of them. How do you react when you see these?
I mean, I'm not shocked. I couldn't be shocked. You know, we protested here in Ferguson. You know, there were white people, white officers with tattoos, white supremacist tattoos. That Lincoln officers in Philadelphia, who, you know, are now covering up their tattoos or wearing long sleeves in the middle of hot summers, just so they're not exposed. We'd be some fools if we wouldn't believe that white supremacists is not intrinsically in every part of society. Thurgood Marshall, a civil rights attorney who became the first Black Supreme Court justice in the history of America, said that the white supremacists have traded in their white robes for Black ones, meaning that the white supremacists have now become judges. And so we've always known this, that white supremacists are not, you know, they want to make white supremacists, or the mainstream media wants to make white supremacists some, you know, country, dumb hillbilly who live somewhere off that has no, you know, strong social, economic, or political base. That's not true. They clearly are the officers, judges, store owners, teachers. We even had a college football coach come out and salute them, and he lost his job over it. But how many years has he been coaching? 20 years of being a white supremacist and a racist. And so this is the history of America, that white supremacists are in every part because it's sewn into the fabric of America.
You know, I'm going to, you know, just read the last two lines of her quote. They had the audacity to show their badges and show their ID cards. They weren't trying to hide who they were because they knew nothing would happen to them.
White supremacy badge, you know, it's like a white privilege card. You know, maybe they use it at Sam's Club. I don't know.
I mean, even so, you know, those rioters taking pictures with police officers, and even more shocking, we saw police officers opening the gates, like the barricades for them. So now you really ask yourself, I mean, like the DC police could not have not known about it. I don't believe that. People in DC said hotels were already booked. Donald Trump made his speech. You know, people did not drop from, you know, in parachutes. They had to drive. They had to show up. They had to gather. And the governor of Maryland was proposing his help. And the Secretary of Defense, according to what I've been, you know, able to gather, you know, firsthand, is he went AWOL. He was nowhere to be found, even though Larry Hogan was saying, we've got troops. I'm just waiting for the green light to send the National Guard.
You know, I mean, if they're part of the Democratic Party, then, you know, most likely they're part of the rigging process. And so, like, you know, your earlier point is, you know, the comparisons start and stop at how the police or how law enforcement or how the government responds. But we do have to have a historical international classification for this. If this was any other country that after a legal verified election was going on, that we were changing a pendulum from one party to the next or one regime to the next, and people would go to the Capitol and try to overthrow it, we would call it what it is. It's a coup. And not just a regular coup where you're talking about just, you know, poor people or some other outsiders. We're talking about a coup that could possibly go right up into the White House, into the Pentagon. And so we're talking about the Secretary of Defense could be involved. We're talking about the head of the Capitol Police could be involved. We're talking about elected officials, and from Terry Crews to Mark Rubio's and all of these people, they could be involved. This could be an intricate network of white supremacists trying to go on their last kind of plea of hope for white supremacy running America.
I mean, even at the time of recording, I mean, like, we have 8 Republicans who wouldn't budge, and they still wouldn't condemn the violence despite what happened and 5 people being left dead. What kind of sense of entitlement must you have to witness what's been going on? You can imagine how dramatic it's going to be for the next year, for years to come, and you come and say, well, I refuse to condemn this violence. What does it say about the Republican Party? Can we look into a possible split of the Republican Party, an outright collapse? And, or I might say that those 8 individuals, among whom we can name, as you said earlier, Ted Cruz, they are positioning themselves as the people who will, you know, bear the torch and say, okay, after Trump, here we are as the people who are going to carry the struggle forward. How do you see that?
I mean, the split between the right wing or the Republican Party has already happened. It was a knee-jerk, emotional reaction that was led by somebody who eventually took that anger and formulated the Tea Party. And so the Tea Party is the subset of the fascists, or the super conservatives, to the unabashed and overtly racist Republican Party. So that split exists. I think also we have to not only look at the Josh Hawleys, which is the senator of the state of Missouri where I reside, but the Democrats. If the Democrats do not expel, suspend, or silence these senators and House Republicans, for not disavowing violence in a coup, then it's showing the complacency on both parties. This is not Bill Clinton having sexual relations with Monica Lewinsky. This ain't that. This is people saying, we don't care about you voting. We don't care about laws. We don't care about the Constitution. What we care about is white power. I mean, white supremacy. And so I think what we ought to see, not only on the right, but we need to see clarity on the left. We need political formations, political parties and things. If there's no philosophy or no strategy to take over the Democratic Party, because as it stands, the squad has grown by 2 with Jamal Bowden and Cori Bush. 6 people out of 535 is not going to cut it. And so what we have to do is either pull something to the left of that or either take the Democratic Party over.
Yeah, but between what is needed and what is being done, don't you think there is, you know, a widening gulf, especially with the pressing issues post George Floyd and now post Capitol Hill? You know, do you really think, I mean, I saw the criticism being, you know, aimed at, you know, AOC for her, you know, stopping short of voting for Nancy Pelosi and then doing it.
Right.
Of course, I'm not gonna, you know, I don't wanna be a demagogue and, you know, I haven't spoken to her, so obviously I'm not gonna, you know, start judging her. Nevertheless, do you mean, like, are there grounds to believe that people will either, you know, take over the Democratic Party and if they fail, you know, choose a different alternative?
Well, I mean, we've seen some of those tactics with the Justice Democrats and things. So,
I mean, it's not like the Democratic Party is going to collapse and is waiting for people to come and take it over. Like the
right.
Old players, you know, are still there and they are not showing any sign of saying, okay, you know, this is the time for the youth to take over and propose
right.
Better. You know, otherwise Nancy Pelosi wouldn't have run for re-election.
Well, you know, long live Che Guevara. You know, he said it, you know, freedom is, you know, not something that's just going to fall in your lap. You know, it's like an apple on a tree. You have to shake the tree. You have to make it fall. And so, you know, I, as a Black person, I've never had full freedom or freedom in this country ever. And so I wouldn't expect the Democratic donors to just give us millions upon millions of dollars. I wouldn't expect Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer to step aside and allow an AOC or some more progressive person to step in and lead the party. I would expect for poor, disenfranchised, oppressed people to organize themselves in powerful ways. And if, you know, if our ancestors, our elders, you know, stay true, then Bobby Seale of the Black Panther Party said in the 1970s, we are not outnumbered, we are out-organized. And so if we organize ourselves around a platform that can change, minimum wage, if we can get healthcare, universal healthcare, we can get free state institutions, state college and stuff like that, then we can talk about something. But, you have a Republican Party who's the party for, more police, anti-abortion, no more women's rights, anti-LGBTQ and hate for Black people. And the Democrat is a kumbaya party. You could be an anti-abortion or pro-abortion Democrat. You can be for a minimum wage increase. You can be for none of that. You could be for a border wall and be a Democrat. And so now we have to talk about what does it mean to have a real people's-led platform and organize around that.
What's your message to the broader grassroots across America, east to west, today, as we saw the Republican Party probably crashing? It's not like the Republican Party, overwhelmingly, said, okay, enough is enough. If, of course, they ended up ratifying or confirming Joe Biden's election. But what do you send as a message for people who are out there and are like, okay, what is this moment? How can we seize this moment as an opportunity to push forward a better agenda for social justice and to make gains we haven't been able to make for years?
The bully on the international playground is limping, got a twisted ankle. So now is the time to go beat the bully up. You wouldn't be able to beat Thanos up without the Black Panthers coming in at the end of the Avengers movie. And so now is the time for us to come together like Voltron and really take this empire out. And we have to restructure it towards something that works for the masses of people. And so, I don't take it lightly. I just see it as an opportunity to even the score.
But are the different parts of the Voltron you mentioned willing to come together? Because we know how it is, Tori. Let's not be demagogic about it. We know how the grassroots are. It's atomized, various agendas rivaling one another.
And for sure,
others have been able to have a common vision despite their differences. They are still walking the same direction. It's not the case of the grassroots working against racism, systemic racism, police brutality. How do you bring these pieces together despite the toxic tradition of self-promotion, celebrity activism, and trying to get a seat at the Democratic Party? And I'm saying this for knowing what's happening in the US, but also in France, we have the same problems. And that's why, we can call out what's happening at the national level with these parties. On our side, we are, go ahead.
I feel like we play this game in the Western Empire, in the Western Hemisphere, where we don't like populist. We don't like, and when I hear that, it's like, you don't like charisma, like you don't like a Malcolm. Like when Malcolm says something, it do something to your spirit. And so you don't want someone who can galvanize the masses of people, that can move and motivate people, that it can form people, even entertain people with the information. And so Bernie has done it. AOC does it. Cori Bush is now doing it. What we need is a movement of leaders and people who can not only have that kind of rhetoric that excites the base, but moves the base towards not a woman or a man, but a plan and a vision. And so I think that's where we need to be aiming for. Big Mama would tell me, by hook or crook, I got to get it done, baby. And so I don't really care what pops out or what the strategy is, or what the tactics is, as long as the tactics are based on the principle of people-powered agendas and meeting the material conditions of the people.
You're based in St. Louis. You're a historic activist out of Ferguson. You've made the headlines after to organize in the aftermath of Mike Brown. You have confronted police brutality in the aftermath. You have confronted those two weirdos who pulled guns on you. I forgot the McCloskey, excuse me, you know, in front of their house, one with an AR-15 and the wife with a gun. What do you send now as a message, narrowly speaking, to the St. Louis, you know, area, from the grassroots all the way to Cory Bush? Like, is there something that can be done in the next few weeks, for example?
For sure. You know, I plan this to try to consolidate the energy and really use it as the force towards one thing. And so since we see national politics are fragmented, we believe that local organizing is cold, it's cool, it's lit, it's all of those things. But now we need to push towards a national agenda in which these things can get to the masses of people. Taking this piece by piece thing is not going to work. And so what we're saying is now is the time to push the Democratic Party. They have the House, you know, they have both houses in Parliament, and they have the White House. And so they have nothing to stop them from raising the minimum wage. But we have to consolidate those things. And so what I've been doing all week, even before the election results came in, has been talking to other leaders, other people like my son, other people like Tamika Mallory, like Tiffany Dina Lofton at the NAACP, so that we can consolidate these ideas and push forward towards one agenda. We don't want to give Biden 100 things or 50 things. We say that we can keep him to 5 or 10 things. Let's see what a Biden can do in the next 100 days. If we talk about reparations, if we talk about jobs and justice, if we talk about housing and healthcare and education, let's just put some very basic things on the table. And if they make excuses, then we'll make the noise. And if they don't, and if they do what we want, then we show what FDR once told labor organizers in the 1930s. I believe that you have a great plan, great agenda. Now make me do it. And so now it's time to make the politicians, even Cory Bush included, make them do it.
Are people like Cory Bush receptive to this? Or
do you think? For sure. For sure. So she's been on board with some of these things. She's been in conversation in some of these things. And so I think a Cory Bush is, you know, to me, not to, you know, pin people against each other, but AOCs are cool, you know, because they work, they do the working class thing. But I also like my working class politicians in the street. And so Cory Bush comes from out of protests, comes from out of these meetings. And so these are the people that we should be lifting up. And these are the people, the AOCs, the Ayanna Pressleys, and the Cory Bushes should be all coming together, as well as local leaders across the country should be coming together for one national agenda that makes Black lives actually matter through policy, legislation, an agenda that works for the masses.
How do you see things evolving in the next couple of years in the aftermath of what happened? Do you think a Joe Biden presidency will, you know, repair what happened? Or do you think that the Joe Biden presidency will be highly challenged by this, by Trumpism, you know, across the nation? It's not like they're going to leave him alone. Donald Trump may leave office, but he might also be around to make it impossible to govern. The same way America made it impossible for elected officials in Latin America, in Africa, in Asia, to carry their popular mandate and do the job they were elected to do. Wouldn't Donald Trump play the role America played across the global South, meaning making it impossible for duly elected, you know, officials to do the job they were elected to do?
Yeah, I mean, I can't, you know, white supremacists, fascists, you know, Donald Trump's, the Steve Bannons of the world, I can't really be optimistic or even predictive. We know what they're going to do. They're going to be racist. They're going to try to make all the money, and they're going to attempt to oppress the masses. I can't really speak for Joe Biden or Obama and the centrists. You know, because they're going to try to return to normal. What I can say is two things. One, what can happen now is that we return to a normal that led to this last 60, 70 years of American empire and imperialism. So we can't lead back to the policies that killed Thomas Sankara, that killed Patrice Lumumba, that killed Muammar Gaddafi, that got sanctions on Ethiopia and Somalia, and so on and so forth. We can't return to the policies that allow, colonial settler states in Palestine or in Morocco. And so what we have to get to a point is that we have to have a movement that stops the imperialism and colonialism globally. We have to stop wars, and we have to keep America to America's borders, and we have to build a movement where everybody gets what they deserve. We can't shun nobody or push nobody away from the table. There may be millions of demands. All 1 million of the demands should be met in a timely fashion. If not, you will see Mike Pence, Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz, or some other bigot running the White House again. Not a covert racist, but an overt one.
With rising poverty in the U.S., with in a COVID-19 situation that has left over 300,000 people dead, the limits of institutions to properly function during this pandemic, the fact that people do not have enough money to put food on the table, and that in Congress they are still debating on whether they should be bailing people out as they are starving and losing their jobs. Do you think there are receptive ears to make America withdraw from its interventionism across the globe and cut all this military aid to dictatorships across the Middle East, to contribute to occupying forces like Israel, and to put that money where it belongs, which means in the pockets and mouths of Americans?
Yeah, I mean, we talking about straight up ending embargoes, sanctions, and pet imperialist projects. And so that means the ending of AFRICOM. That means the end of all embargoes on Cuba and Venezuela. And that means the ends of sanctions in East African countries. And so we have to be able to push for that. I think what happens is that we play this game of who America is hurting. And just because people in America can't see the people around the world hurting, we think that America is better. And so we can't play that game no more. The wool has been pulled from people's eyes, and we have to push not for a local or a national agenda. We have to get one for an international agenda, because we are in an international empire. It colonizes all kinds of places. It does some of the most heinous things. And if it doesn't do it, it funds or buddies up with dictators, be it from Saudi Arabia or anywhere else in the world.
I'm going to have you watch what the president of France said right after the Capitol Hill riots or failed coup. And please, I want to have your reaction. Stand by.
I just wanted to express our friendship and our faith in the United States. What happened today in Washington, D.C. is not America, definitely. We believe in the strength of our democracies. We believe in the strength of American democracy.
All right, so what do you make of this?
I was telling the black, brown, and yellow people of the world to watch out. It sounds like white supremacy or white nation states leading by France is making all the right words, and it sounds like they are about to attack the weakness of America. I know it probably doesn't sound like that. I know it sounds like a hypocritical kind of oath or kind of statement. But for me, I hear history. You know, I hear a Churchill. I hear a Hitler. I hear a Stalin. I hear a white organization, white nation states basically saying America is in turmoil. We don't do that. But we as French are going to help you and others around the world to put in this one person, one vote democracy. And we'll be coming to a third world country new year. And so that's what I heard.
For me, who was born and raised here, and to see Emmanuel Macron speak of so highly of American democracy as if these events never took place before, as if America never intervened in foreign elections, to prevent people from seeing their elected president or ministers or whatever do the job they were expected to do. I cannot help but think of how people have been violently repressed under Emmanuel Macron. That Emmanuel Macron again was elected when the majority of people abstained from voting, which means over 50% of French voters did not go to vote on the presidential election. So what kind of legitimacy does that give?
You say, hold on, I'm sorry. You said what? Hold on, you said over 50% didn't vote?
Over 50% of French voters did not go to vote. They abstained.
Which means
you got elected by the majority of a minority. And that's the problem with our constitution in France, is that we don't have a limit. So technically, if 5% of the people go to vote and you win the majority of those 5%, you are the president. And for Emmanuel Macron, who himself has cracked down on human rights and civil liberties for the past 3 years, that he's been highly unpopular for repressing the Yellow Vest movement, for him who has intervened in the Sahel region, for him who has not, been loyal to the French constitution, who is today using Islamophobia as a gathering or a rallying cry to bring French voters around him and scapegoat Muslims today the same way Jews have been scapegoated in the past. It's kind of, you'll ask yourself whether you are in the Twilight Zone or not. And the fact that when you have Emmanuel Macron, who's made a name for himself across the globe as authoritarian, as a person who has very little regards to democracy, the rule of law, and who's always been trying to go around the law to make his agenda legit. I think if I were American, I wouldn't take it. I wouldn't welcome such a discourse. However,
I don't think the movements would take it as that. I think the white power structure, like the Bidens of the world, and white liberals and centrists like a Macron statement, because you look at it from only, surface value. We believe in democracy, one person, one vote. This is not how we, and we got to be clear what we mean. We don't mean me and you, Yasser. They ain't talking. When they say we, they're not talking about us. And so they would like a young, fresh democracy. They would like a democracy where the appearance of one person, one vote is the way about it. But ask the Francophone, ask Mali, ask any of those nation states, that France, or ask Haiti, how the destabilizing of elections looks and what the aftermath looks like. And so I hear it. I would like to see it out of Macron. Forgive all the debt. Forgive all the debt to Haiti. Relinquish the Francophone. Allow African nations to keep their money in their own vaults, in their own country. I don't know. That starts there. Don't start with a speech and don't, nice suit though.
To end this show, Tori, let's say we witness, Biden coming into office, whether Trump is impeached or not. I mean, he's got 10, 15 days left. That it won't really change a thing, aside from a symbolic, gesture, in the aftermath of the failed coup. How do you see the next 6 months, going on? Do you see Biden coming into office on the ashes of the deep state? Or would you see the deep state actually being shattered by Biden after what happened on Capitol Hill? Or you would see the deep state challenging Biden, because again, the Capitol Hill events would have never taken place without some support from the deep state?
I think what we're gonna see more white people do what they did in Capitol Hill. We have to be clear this year around the mask and all these election things. We've seen capitals across the U.S. been stormed already in 2020. And so what we're gonna see is more of that, but I think what we're gonna see is a more sophisticated white supremacist begin to organize their social, economic, and political power. And so we saw a soft one with the Tea Party, we may see the Republican Party become a Tea Party party, just true and true, on steroids, right? We might see the Josh Hawleys and the Ted Cruzes as some kind of, you know, because we have to understand that, yes, Josh Hawley represents a poor working class state like Missouri, but that's a Yale graduate that taught in Europe. That's not, you know, that's not one of those white boys who blue collar. That's a white collar racist. And so what we're going to see is sophisticated, you know, white supremacy. I know we're not, I doubt that we're going to see an outside inauguration for Joe Biden. I think that'll be witnessing something, you know, it might be another JFK incident. We just got to be honest, because these white people are mad. So what we're going to see, I think, is an internal battle between white people. My concern is, how do black and brown people build agendas where, in which we optimize this opportunity, and we put the things that we always wanted in this nation to make them true. So as I stand, America has never been a democracy. Black people have never had the full right to vote in this country, and still don't to this day. And those are the things that we should concentrate on. And the lives of black people, before they die, before they become hashtags, and before they become headlines, we need to work on the policy for living black lives.
Tory Russell, thank you very much for coming on short notice and for giving us your insight on the latest events.
For sure. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Free Mamiya.
As for you, dear listeners and viewers, this is the end of our episode dedicated to the Capitol Hill riots / attempted coup / failed coup / God knows what's going to happen next. And we brace for the best when it comes to minorities in America, that they hopefully don't pay, you know, carry the brunt of, you know, this, you know, madness called white supremacy. I thank you for listening and watching. If you think this podcast deserves your support, please make a donation on cjl.ong. That's charliejulietlima.oscarnovembergolf/donation. This, of course, will help us make the podcast sustainable on the long run and have a functioning team on the payroll. That's it for today. Please stay safe, wear a mask, social distancing, wash your hands, and please carry the struggle forward. This was Yasser Luwati coming to you from the Paris Southside banlieue.